my primary job is looking at satellite imagery of the Earth. So different sensors, NASA satellites, as well as other satellites, commercial satellites. I'm not a volcanologist or a geologist, but a satellite imagery person.
Recently, you went on a trip to a new island with a name I find very long and very hard to pronounce. It's called Hanga Tonga Hanga Hepe. Where exactly is this island located?
So it's in the Kingdom of Tonga, and it's not actually too far from Tonga's main island, Tonga Tapu. They could see the eruption from the capital when it occurred, but you can't see the island from there.
And when and how did you first find out about this new island?
We weren't particularly watching for this, but we have colleagues and friends who are volcanologists who noted the eruption. Our interest was really in seeing how we could follow the evolution of this island from space, from satellite imagery. There have been many similar eruptions in Tonga. It's on a plate subduction zone, so there's a lot of volcanic activity. But most of these smaller eruptions like this, the islands last for a few months and then they wash away. And that's kind of what we expected to happen here, but it's been a different story.
So the first time you saw it was through satellite photos?
Yeah, I think there were some news reports with some video. I wasn't involved at that early stage, but certainly the Tongans were quite aware something was going on. But the first satellite imagery, high resolution, was, I think the first good one is on the 19th of January when the eruption had basically finished. It had probably just finished at that point.
The young island is located between two older ones. And what do you know about the whole formation process of these islands?
There's an underwater volcano, essentially a caldera. I think it's about 5 kilometers across the top. So kind of a flat platform underwater. On top of that, there were these two old pre-existing islands that are pretty linear, a couple of kilometers long and much less wide. And so those old islands are kind of on the rim of this underwater caldera. So the new vent opened up between those two pre-existing islands, and it immediately connected to one, Hunga Hapai. And then within the first 6 months, the erosion processes connected it via a land bridge to the other one, Hunga Tonga. In 2009, there was an eruption nearby, but it was just south of Hunga Hapai, the western island, and that only lasted 6 or 9 months before it washed away.
Is it very common that a new island evolves?
These types of eruptions are fairly common in Tonga. You know, every 5 to 20 years, something like this seems to happen. Not right here, but there's some other sites that have occurred in the past few decades. But for it to last more than a few months or a year, it seems to be quite unusual. None of these other eruptions in the past 100 years has stuck around. It was probably a bit bigger, the material, the volume. Perhaps it's somewhat protected by those two other islands from the ocean currents. So maybe a combination of those things.
And you joined a team to visit the island. Who else was part of the team?
You know, we wanted to visit, but we didn't really have funding to do that. We were just kind of looking at it from space. But there's a group called Sea Semester, which is basically a kind of a study abroad program for undergraduates. And they do a trip. They do many trips. One of their trips is through Tonga and Fiji and Samoa in the South Pacific on these tall ship sailing ships. So they go by the island and they had wanted to stop. So they kind of found out about the work we'd done from space, and they invited us to join them on the ship for that leg of the journey. So we jumped at the chance to have transport to the island. It was really a great opportunity, exciting experience. And, you know, the other advantage of going with them is there were about 20, I think, undergraduates on the ship, so they were available to help us, you know, run around the island and look for things and take measurements.
What was the main goal of this expedition?
So for us at NASA, the main goal was to take some ground control points. So this helps us build better elevation models from the satellite data, and so we can calibrate them against one another more carefully. So we're trying to really very carefully track the evolution of the volume of the island as it's eroding away. And so we're building topographic models from stereo imagery from space. And to do that very precisely, we needed some actual known ground control points. So that was our primary goal. We were also looking for some rocks and minerals to kind of understand the eruption better. Coincidentally, we saw the vegetation growth and the birds, which was very interesting. Not really our expertise, but interesting nonetheless.
What kind of plants or animals did you actually see on the island?
The two pre-existing islands, one of them, the eastern one, Hungotonga, was heavily vegetated, and somehow that vegetation survived the eruption, which surprised me, because after the eruption, in the imagery, it was all covered with ash. I had assumed it would have been hot and killed the vegetation, but once it washed away with the rain, it was largely intact. The western island was largely decimated, the vegetation from the eruption. So the vegetation that was regrowing now was not too surprising, because there's attached islands with vegetation on it. And we could see one patch of this from satellite, and that was largely a species called beach morning glory, which is very common on Pacific seashores in the South Pacific. But more surprising was on the side of the cone, just in one particular location, there was a patch of several different species and a lot of birds. So the birds had probably brought that in with their droppings. But it was very interesting that it was only occurring in this one place. I don't know if that was because the soil there had developed more so it could support plant life, or the birds decided that was a good place to go, and so they brought it in. But it'll be very interesting to see how that changes over time. Most of the birds were sooty terns. There were, I would say, at least 1,000, if not more. They were nesting. They were nesting on the side of the cone. They were nesting inside the crater, around the crater lake, and all these crevices around the vent, which was fascinating. There were also other common South Pacific birds, and one barn owl, which I saw on a rock.
Wow.
Surprising to me. I didn't think barn owls would occur there, but apparently that's not too surprising.
Was this expedition actually the first time that people went on this new island?
No, not at all. We were there in October of 2018, so it had been there for 3.5 years at that point. And now the Tongans had been there, I'm sure, multiple times. Some other scientists have been there, so we definitely weren't the first. There's not a lot of traffic, but there was actually signs of some tourists are going, I guess, unfortunately leaving trash on the island. There was a huge amount of plastic trash on the island, and most of that, I'm sure, was not left by tourists, but it was washed in from the ocean, which was pretty surprising that so much would accumulate over 3.5 years.
Could you also describe the rest of the landscape and the nature conditions on the island?
So there's those large land bridges which connect the cone to the old islands. And those are all very dark, gravelly type material. And then there's patches of mud in that, which again surprised me. I didn't really think there would be mud. Basically, clay materials are washing out of the cone through weathering, and I guess it's not unexpected. So there are large patches of mud, which is kind of where the beach morning glory was growing. And it's a very kind of dramatic landscape, because you have the cone on the one hand, which is this kind of dark or quite dark feature. And then you have the old islands, which Hungotonga on the one side is bright green with vegetation. It's got this tropical rainforest on top. I mean, it's really quite stunning with a lot of bird life. Hungahapai on the other side, you couldn't see as much vegetation, but it's got very dramatic geology, which you can see these bands of layers of rock from previous incarnations of an island in this location, and a big cave on it with a lot more birds than that as well.
One of the main reasons you went there was to collect samples of these rocks. What can these rocks actually tell about the elevation of the island?
So there's one process that may be going on that we were looking for evidence of, and that's a process called palagatinization. So it's a process where the ash material, the tephra material, interacts with seawater and the heat of the eruption and forms a much harder material. You know, the ash material is pretty soft, and you can, you know, claw away at it with your hand quite easily. Instead of that, it turns into something that's much more like concrete. If it's going on, it's probably, you know, not visible, but we were hoping to find some signs of it at this point. And we think we did. We still haven't analyzed those samples in the lab, but it's a very yellowish-looking rock. And similar eruptions that have occurred in Surtsey in Iceland in the 1960s and Capolinos in the Azores in the 1950s, this palagonite material did form, but it took, at least in Surtsey, a couple of decades for it to really be exposed, because the overlying ash had to wash away or weather away. And this may also explain why the island has been around for so long, 3.5 years versus 9 months like previous eruptions. If that process is occurring, it'll have a much firmer foundation to last over time. And it could be a combination of the processes occurring, and maybe it's protected by the two older islands, and maybe it was a larger amount of eruptive material, so it has more time before it gets eroded anyway. So it may be a combination of all those factors that it's allowing it to stick around longer.
If you take a look into the future, what do you think will happen to the young island? How will it change during the next years or decades?
Yeah, that's the big question. We get new imagery maybe once a month or so. Clouds are always a problem. And every time I get one, I always think, well, finally, there's going to be a major collapse in that inner crater where it's so steep. And there hasn't been since, you know, mid-2015. There have been minor changes. The south coast is eroding, but even that is slowing down quite a bit. So, you know, it looks like it's going to stick around for decades. I would imagine it will become more linear as it has been over time. You know, if the crater lake gets fully open to the ocean, it was briefly open to the ocean in mid-2015, and we thought then you're going to have ocean waves impacting the crater, the interior crater walls, and that'll really pull it down. But very quickly, a sandbar formed, protecting the crater lake from the ocean. So maybe that will fail, and that will cause more erosion. But I think it's going to be around for a while at this point. It seems to be holding together.